The headlines, the Yemeni army says the U.S. and U.K. bear full responsibility for their criminal aggression against the country, pledging to retaliate. Reactions pour in following the U.S.-led aggression on Yemen, with Iran and the resistance front warning of threats to regional and international peace. And also in our headlines, the International Court of Justice brings the second day of hearings on a lawsuit by South Africa over Israel's genocide in Gaza. Our top story for this half hour. Yemen has vowed revenge after the U.S. and U.K. carried out airstrikes on the country.
The American and British enemy bears full responsibility for its criminal aggression against our Yemeni people, and it will not go unanswered and unpunished.
The spokesman said the U.S. and British militaries carried out 73 strikes targeting the capital Sana'a and four other Yemeni cities. Sarei said the offensive killed five Yemeni armed forces and injured six others. The strikes on Yemen were launched from air and sea late on Thursday. They were conducted at the U.S. president's direction and with the support of Australia, Canada, the Netherlands, and Bahrain. Joe Biden said the strikes were a direct response to what he called unprecedented Yemeni attacks against international maritime vessels in the Red Sea. Yemen says there has been no threat to international shipping and its attacks are only aimed at Israeli-linked vessels. Yemen has promised to continue its attacks until the Gaza genocide ends. Activist and political analyst Hossein Al-Bukhaiti says the U.S. cannot use other countries' territories to launch attacks on Yemen. He says the Yemeni people are united in the face of any act of aggression against their country.
Every single oil infrastructure and gas infrastructure in those countries, and as well they will target U.S. bases in those countries, and as well they will block the sea and target any commercial ship or cargo ship or oil tanker belonging to those countries who will actually allow United States to use their country to launch a war against Yemen. But I'm sure that United States cannot conduct a full and a major attack against Yemen only if they are if they're going to be using those bases across the Gulf country. Yemeni is well equipped in defeating United States and UK, and those attack that was launched against Yemen, as the United States, they said maybe hundreds of missiles. They target army base in Kahlan, army base in Saada. They have targeted Adelami air base in Sana'a airport. They have targeted area around Hodeidah airport and as well in Zabit, central Hodeidah. As well, they have targeted Hajja Abs area and Hajja airport. And they have targeted Taiz airport and other army base in central Taiziyah, directly of Taiz province. I mean, just imagine just 75 attack. Yemen has been under hundreds of thousands of missile attack and strikes with the same weapons, with the same support from UK and United States. What they have done? They haven't done anything. They couldn't actually stop the Yemeni fighting back. They couldn't defeat the Yemeni. The Yemeni actually are the one who defeated. So what will it make? What difference will it make? 100 missiles, 1,000 missiles, 1,000 attack, tens of thousand attack from the United States against Yemen. It will actually make no difference. It will make Yemeni much, much stronger. And because of this attack, Yemeni actually are united.
Reactions are pouring in following the U.S.-led aggression on Yemen, with Iran and resistance movements in the region strongly condemning the attacks. The Islamic Jihad says the aggression is part of Western support for Israel and shows that Washington manages the Gaza war. Hamas has called the U.S. and U.K. attacks an uncalculated terrorist act conducted under the influence of the Israeli regime. Lebanon's Hezbollah movement also said that the aggression is yet another proof of the U.S. complicity in what it called catastrophes in Gaza and the region. Iran has denounced the violation of Yemen's sovereignty and territorial integrity. It said the attacks violate international law and will foment insecurity in the region and beyond. And Russia has accused the U.S. and UK of triggering destructive escalation in Yemen.
We strongly condemn these irresponsible actions by the United States and its allies. A large-scale military escalation in the Red Sea region could undermine the positive trends that have emerged recently in Yemen peace process and destabilize the region.
Russia called for a UN Security Council meeting on Friday. Turkey and Iraq have also slammed the spate of attacks. The Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said the U.S. and the U.K. are trying to turn the Red Sea into a bloodbath. Saudi Arabia and China expressed concern, with Riyadh urging restraint. Well, Yemeni protesters have poured onto the streets in the northern city of Sa'ada, condemning the latest U.S.-led aggression on their country. Well, the rally was dubbed Promise Conquest, with the protesters pledging support for the Yemeni army. They also denounced the Israeli genocide in Gaza. The Yemenis chanted slogans against U.S. and Israel over their atrocities in the besieged Palestinian territories. Mass rallies were also planned for later Friday in response to a call by Ansar the leader Abdel Malik al-Houthi. Yemenis have held protests every Friday since the Gaza war broke out more than 3 months ago. Youssef Maori is joining us now from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. Please talk to us about the pro-Palestinian and anti-U.S. Israeli demonstrations that have been ongoing.
Yes, well, the one here in the Yemeni capital, Sana'a, it just concluded about 10 minutes ago, and we're over here in the streets, and people are just finishing up and going back home. I can tell you this was a mass crowd, talking within the millions, at least 2 million Yemeni protesters who took to the streets today, all condemning the U.S. and the British military aggression that occurred last night at 2:30 in the morning. And again, this was a very similar attack to that of the 2015 when Saudi Arabia led a coalition. That airstrike back in 2015 was exactly at 2:30. So they're almost identical. They even targeted the same military sites as the ones that were targeted back in 2015. I can tell you that today was the first time that I've actually seen a British flag being burned in the Yemeni capital. Yemenis are typically burning U.S. and Israeli flags, but today they've added to that mix the British flag because of their military involvement in the attacks on Yemen.
Okay, let's talk about the potential. Yeah, if you want to continue, you can. If you can, may also talk to us about the potential response that the Yemenis have pledged with regards to this U.S. and U.K.-led aggression against the sovereignty of Yemen.
Well, they're promising to target all U.S. and all British military targets in the Red Sea. That's something that they've vowed to commit to. And the existence of U.S. and British military reinforcements, military warships in the Red Sea, they're not going to be very safe for long because Yemen does have ballistic missiles. They do have sophisticated unmanned drones that are able to go undetected for a short distance. So those are the Ansar Allah's primary targets, is the U.S. and the military and the British military warships and navy fleets that are currently patrolling in the Red Sea. Another target, according to the military spokesperson, is the U.S. military bases that are stretched out all across the Middle East. So we're talking about U.S. military bases in Djibouti. We're talking about military bases in Oman, in Saudi Arabia, in of course, in Qatar and in Bahrain. Those are viable targets for the Ansar Allah-backed army. And I can tell you that we have to wait and see what the response is going to be from Ansar Allah, but they're vowing that the response is going to target the U.S. economy and also target U.S. military sites in the region.
Thanks a lot, Youssef Maori, joining us from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. Well, Iranians have held new rallies across the country in support of the Palestinians in Gaza. The protesters took to the streets in different Iranian cities after Friday prayers. They chanted slogans against Israel and its main supporter, the U.S., over the genocide against Palestinians. Since the Gaza war began, the Iranian people have held rallies on what they call Fridays of anger over the atrocities in the Palestinian territory. Anger mainly boils at the U.S. over its support for Israel through sending military aid and vetoing anti-Israel resolutions at the UN Security Council. The number of Palestinians killed in nearly 100 days of Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip has risen past 23,700. The health ministry in Gaza says more than 60,000 others have also been injured in the relentless bombings. That's while thousands more are still missing and presumed dead under the rubble of their destroyed homes. Israel has launched fresh attacks on residential buildings in Deir al-Bala in central Gaza, and Khan Yunis in its south. Gaza City and Braij refugee camp were also among the targeted areas. The government media office in Gaza has said the Israeli regime is using starvation as a weapon to force Palestinians out of the besieged territory. Palestinians urge the international community to face, or rather force Israel to stop its heinous atrocities. The International Court of Justice, the ICJ, holds a second day of hearing on a lawsuit against Israel over its genocide in Gaza. Protesters gathered outside the court in The Hague as the hearing got underway. The protesters condemned the Israeli bloodshed of the Palestinians in Gaza. They urged an immediate end to the killing of civilians there. Inside the court, the Israeli regime presented its response to the case filed by South Africa. On the first day of the hearing, lawyers representing South Africa listed a number of genocidal acts committed by Israel against Gazans. At the closing, South Africa demanded the court order Israel to immediately end its genocide.
To indicate the following provisional measures in relation to the Palestinian people as a group protected by the Genocide Convention. These measures are directly linked to the rights that form the subject matter of South Africa's disputes with Israel. One, the State of Israel shall immediately suspend its military operations in and against Gaza. Two, the State of Israel shall ensure that any military or irregular armed units which may be directed, supported, or influenced by it, as well as any organizations and persons which may be subject to its control, direction, or influence, take no steps in furtherance of the military operations referred to in point one above.
Point is.
Many nations, including Iran, have voiced their support for the lawsuit brought by South Africa. The ICJ judgments are binding with no right of appeal. Under the UN Charter, in case of a ruling, Israel must do whatever the court rules. But there's no mechanism to enforce any such order.
That is a simple...
The International Court of Justice in The Hague has held its hearing to consider its provisional measures on a lawsuit filed by South Africa against the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. The case sets a precedent as the first at the ICJ relating to the siege on the Gaza Strip, where thousands of people have been killed since October 7. Pretoria accuses Israel of committing genocide in contravention of the 1948 UN Genocide Convention, which both South Africa and the regime are party to. South Africa alleges that the killing of civilians in large numbers, especially children, the expulsion and displacement of Palestinians en masse, and the destruction of their homes, then citing statements by several Israeli officials portraying Palestinians as subhumans.
Israel's conduct violates Articles 2A, 2B, 2C, and 2D of the Convention. The first genocidal act committed by Israel is the mass killing of Palestinians in Gaza, in violation of Article 2A of the Genocide Convention.
It's an application that's split into two sections. One is the intent to commit genocide, and the second bit deals here with the actual acts of genocide. And many of international legal scholars and others have indicated that it's very difficult for Israel to effectively answer to these cases without having to concede that their actions are indeed in violation of the Geneva Conventions.
To be collectively punished, all constitute genocide and show proof of intent. Evidence submitted by South Africa says acts and omissions by Israel are genocidal in character because they're intended to bring about the destruction of a substantial part of the Palestinian national, racial, and ethnic group. This refers both to what Israel is actively doing, such as carrying out airstrikes, and what it is failing to do, such as preventing harm to civilians.
Gaza, which is one of the most densely populated places in the world, is home to approximately 2.3 million Palestinians, almost half of them children. For the past 96 days, Israel has subjected Gaza to what has been described as one of the heaviest conventional bombing campaigns in the history of modern warfare. Palestinians in Gaza are being killed by Israeli weaponry and bombs from air, land, and sea.
The suit also lists the blockade on food and the destruction of essential health services for pregnant women and babies as measures by Tel Aviv intended to bring about their destruction as a group. The Organization of Islamic Countries, the Arab League, Iran, Bolivia, Colombia, and Brazil, and a number of other countries have also supported South Africa's decision to file the case against Israel. Iran has urged international bodies and agencies, including the UN Security Council, to adopt immediate and practical steps aimed at complete cessation of Israeli military strikes in Gaza.
For people of my age, we were brought up in the struggle against apartheid in South Africa, and to see them leading the charge against Israel was really poignant. So there's a lot riding on this. Obviously, the lives and well-being of people in Gaza, first and foremost, but international law itself is on trial here, and I think the court has to know that.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today, we will complete explanation of Surah Nuh, which has 28 ayahs, of which we have already expounded the first 20 ayahs in our last two weekly episodes. It was revealed in Mecca and opens with an account of Prophet Noah, hence its title is Nuh. It sheds light on the relentless efforts of this ancient prophet to guide the obstinate disbelievers to the path of monotheism and virtue by warning them of divine punishment before the massive flood that finally drowned them for their sins and idol worship. The disbelievers of his time had transgressed all moral bounds. If they had availed of the centuries-long respite given to them by the all-merciful Creator and repented and reformed themselves, they would have been spared of the terrible punishment. The message of this surah is that pagan superstitions and cults do not add to human knowledge or well-being. They only increase error, evil, corruption, and injustice. Noah is the first of the five great prophets, the other four being Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and the last and greatest of them all, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He lived the longest time span and is the only prophet whose mission of 950 years is mentioned in the Noble Quran. Ordered by God Almighty, he built the huge ark to rescue a pair of every kind of animals and the small number of people who were on the right path, and thus he succeeded in the deliverance of the virtuous among mankind and other species of living things from the great flood. Glimpses of Noah's mission are also found in the surahs A'raf, Yunus, Hud, Anbiya, Mu'minun, Shu'ara, and Ankabut. We continue from where we left you last Friday, and here are ayahs 21, 22, and 23.
قال نوح رب إنهم عصوني واتبعوا من لم يزده ماله وولده إلا خسارا ومكروا مكرا كبارا وقالوا لا تذرن آلهتكم ولا تذرن ودا ولا سواعا ولا يغوث ويعوق ونسرا.
Noah said, My Lord, the disbelievers have disobeyed me and followed someone whose wealth and children only add to this loss. And they have devised an outrageous plot. They say among themselves, Do not abandon your gods, do not abandon Wad, nor Suwa, nor Yaghuth, Yob, and Nasr. Last week and the week before we had referred to the strenuous efforts of Prophet Noah for long centuries to awaken the conscience of his nation for obedience to none except the Almighty Creator by enumerating the bounties of the All-Merciful Lord all around us and to desist from sins and idol worship. The ayahs that we recited to you now indicate Noah's patience running thin at the intransigence of his nation, of whom only a few remained on the right path, leaving the extremely patient prophet no other choice but to complain to the Almighty Creator of the total deviation and devilish plots of those continuously sinking deeply in sins by following the wealthy idolaters who consider the stone and wooden objects crafted by themselves as gods. The five principal duties worshipped by the polytheist in those days were named Wad, Suwa, Yaghuth, Yob, and Nasr. A glance at the history of mankind makes us understand how the ignorant masses in every era and place were manipulated by the ringleaders of oppression and polytheism, whose power was based on amassing unlawful possessions and fathering unworthy offspring, while ridiculing the prophets of God and preventing people from heeding the voice of reason and piety. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, many people, instead of acknowledging the manifest truth, blindly pursue carnal pleasures and unlawful earnings on the assumption of attaining prosperity. Number two, history bears witness how the prophets were mocked and persecuted by the wealthy and sinful tyrants who prevented most people from proper cognizance of the one and only Creator by imposing idol worship upon them. And number three, a deviated and sinful majority cannot be a criterion for leadership and governance on the pretext of democracy and representative rule. Now let us listen to ayahs 24 and 25 of the same surah.
وَقَدْ أَضَلُّوا كَثِيرًا وَلَا تَزِدِ الظَّالِمِينَ إِلَّا ضَلَالًا مِمَّا خَطِيئَاتِهِمْ أُغْرِقُوا فَأُدْخِلُوا نَارًا فَلَمْ يَجِدُوا لَهُمْ مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ أَنصَارًا.
And they have surely led many astray. O Allah, do not increase the wrongdoers in anything but error. They, the unbelievers, were drowned in the great flood because of their iniquities, then made to enter the fire in afterlife, and they did not find for themselves any helpers beside Allah. Ayah 24 is Noah's reference to the sinister role of the wealthy tyrants in leading people astray, and consequently his invoking of divine curse that the lot of the intransigent wrongdoers ought to be nothing but plunging in more error for refusal to avail of the respite of life given by the Almighty Creator for reform and repentance. Ayah 25 refers to the terrible punishment of the obdurate sinners after centuries of respite through a great flood that drowned them all and trapped them in the eternal fire, making them realize after death the dire consequences of their unpardonable crime in disobeying the Almighty Creator, who alone could have saved them in case of repentance. The fate of a person after death is either a garden of paradise for the righteous believers or a pit of hell for the disbelievers and obdurate sinners. From these ayahs, we learn that number one, the notables such as political, social, academic, cultural, religious figures and the so-called celebrities of cinema and sports should be extra cautious of their words and deeds, which can adversely affect a great number of people, especially the youth. Number two, evil is not limited to the misuse of wealth, power, and the physical body, but also includes cultural deviation and false beliefs in the name of religion, which are more dangerous and destructive. Number three, divine punishment is the lot of the disbelievers on resurrection and the day of judgment, while some sinners are afflicted in life itself as a form of chastisement to them and as an admonition to others. And number four, wealth, power, influential friends, or a large number of followers are of no avail in afterlife and cannot save anyone from divine punishment. In conclusion of this week's Path Towards Enlightenment, which also marks the completion of Surah Nuh, we invite you to listen to ayahs 26, 27, and 28.
وَقَالَ نُوحُ الرَّبِّ لَا تَذَرْ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ مِنَ الْكَافِرِينَ دَيَّارًا إنك إن تذرهم يضلوا عبادك ولا يلدوا إلا فاجرا كفارا رب اغفر لي ولوالدي ولمن دخل بيتي مؤمنا وللمؤمنين والمؤمنات ولا تزد الظالمين إلا تبارا.
And Noah said, My Lord, do not leave on the earth any dweller from among the faithless. Indeed, if you leave them, they will lead astray your servants and will not beget except vicious ingrates. O my Lord, forgive me and my parents, and whoever enters my house in faith, and also the believing men and believing women, and do not increase the wrongdoers in anything except ruin. The huge flood that engulfed the earth was a divine punishment after centuries of respite for the intransigent disbelieving sinners concerning whom Noah's proverbial patience had turned into despair, leaving him with no other choice to save the few believers and humanitarian values except by invoking the curse of God that no disbeliever of his time should be spared because such wicked persons lead others astray and produce a brood of ungrateful sinners themselves. A point to note is that the curse of the prophets is not the result of wrath, hatred, and vengeance, but divine inspiration to save humanity from the tyranny of the obdurate oppressors who will never be guided and will never desist from genocide and misleading of others. Ayah 28 is indicative of the humbleness of Prophet Noah, whose very name, or more properly epithet, means lamentation or Nuha in the Semitic language, at the miserable fate the disbelievers and sinners were bringing upon themselves by refusing to heed his words of reason. Thus, he seeks forgiveness or divine grace for himself, for his parents, as a token of gratitude towards them for his upright upbringing, for the faithful frequenting his house and boarding the ark for refuge from the flood, and all men and women believing in his mission. He then repeats his invocation to God for the ruin of the wicked. According to reliable narrations, the sprawling Grand Mosque of the city of Kufa in Iraq was the home of Prophet Noah and the place where he built the huge ark. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, a person or a society immersed in error, evil, corruption, and oppression is prone to destruction. Number two, parents play a pivotal role in the upbringing of children, whether through guidance or misguidance, and the next generation is the outcome of the present one. And number three, we should be humble in the presence of God, the omnipresent, by praying for forgiveness of our shortcomings, that of our parents and the rest of the believers, while disavowing the disbelievers. On that note, we come to the end of the explanation of Surah Nuh, and next week we will present you Surah Jen. Till then, God bless you and goodbye.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned. Those who respect Hadrat Fatimatu Zahra will find salvation and prosperity. One good example is Hor, the commander of the army who stood against Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in the year 61 AH in the Ashura tragedy. When Hor stopped Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam from moving further anymore, Imam told him, "May your mother grieve for you." Upon hearing this, Hor became angry, but he controlled his anger and told Imam al-Hussein, "If this was told by anyone except you, son of Fatima, I would answer him on the spot." In other words, Hor showed respect for Lady Fatimatu Zahra.
یه احترام کرد شد هور که تا قیامت ما سلام بهش میدیم.
The Hor's respect for Lady Fatima to Zahra made him remembered always in the story of Karbala, and according to some narrations, this was the main reason for Hor to be freed from the temptations of Satan and to join the army of Imam al-Hussein in the last moment of his life. In other words, respect for Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra can save someone, even if there is not much time to repent from the past sins. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Euromed Human Rights Monitor has renewed its call on the international community, especially the signatory states to the Geneva Convention, to carry out their responsibilities to provide protection for civilians in the Gaza Strip. It further stressed that the need for a permanent ceasefire has become urgent and that, in order to stop the ongoing genocide war, an immediate international investigation must be launched into the Zionist regime's horrific crimes. Any countries that remain silent are actively encouraging Israeli regime genocide, the rights group said. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, the Israeli regime army has executed dozens of elderly people in Gaza in direct shooting operations since October 7th, a human rights group has said. In a statement issued recently, Euromed Human Rights Monitor said, 1,049 elderly men and women have been killed so far, about 1% of the estimated 107,000 elderly people who live in the Gaza Strip, and 3.9% of all Palestinian deaths during the aggression. The majority of them were crushed to death under the debris of their homes or the shelter centers where they sought safety after Israeli aircraft bombed their homes or while being forced to seek basic necessities in the streets and marketplaces. Alarmingly, however, dozens were targeted in killings and failed executions, the group said. The Geneva-based organization stated that it had received horrifying testimony regarding killings and failed executions of several people over the age of 60. The statement added, these incidents included troops shooting elderly people immediately after ordering them to evacuate their homes and, in some cases, executing them just moments after their release from hours or days of arbitrary detention. The group also stated the elderly are paying a high price for the disproportionate attacks carried out by Israeli forces, as hundreds of them have been killed in Israel's genocide and thousands more injured. According to the group, numerous elderly civilians, including both men and women over the age of 70 and even 80, have experienced detention. It added, testimonies from released detainees affirm that they were denied access to treatment and subjected to torture and abuse regardless of their difficult health situation and or advanced age.
According to Euromed Monitor, Israel is waging a campaign of widespread punishment and killing and oppressing Palestinian society's most vulnerable groups in a way that is seldom seen in the modern history of wars or armed conflicts. The organization renewed its call on the international community, especially the signatory states to the Geneva Convention, to carry out their responsibilities to provide protection for civilians in the Gaza Strip. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, 20,424 Palestinians have been killed and 54,036 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza starting on October 7th. Palestinian and international estimates say that the majority of those killed and wounded are women and children. The website of Euromed Human Rights Monitor wrote, the Geneva-based organization stated that it had received horrifying testimony regarding killings and field executions of several people over the age of 60. These incidents included troops shooting elderly people immediately after ordering them to evacuate their homes and in some cases executing them just moments after their release from hours or days of arbitrary detention. According to Euromed Monitor, the elderly Dr. Akram Abu Hasira and his wife were shot and left to bleed to death by the Zionist regime forces on Thursday, December 21st, after being forcibly evacuated from their home on Yarmouk Street in Gaza City. The Zionist regime's troops then set fire to their home. Their son, Dr. Mahmoud Abu Hasira, reported that after the Zionist regime forces withdrew from the area, their family managed to bury the couple's bodies. Furthermore, Ahmad Suleiman Hassan Muhammad Abdul Al, a 60-year-old mentally ill man, was shot and killed in his Jabalia camp home on December 13th, said Euromed Monitor, adding his killing occurred after Israeli regime troops stormed the camp and Abdul Al's home after a days-long siege on the Yemeni hospital. Abdul Nasser Khadar Habub, 62, was also killed, Euromed Monitor reported, when Israeli regime forces fired an artillery shell at him shortly after his release from a two-day detention. This incident also claimed the lives of Palestine University's College of Information Technology Dean, Dr. Ahmad Hamdi Abu Absa, 38. An eyewitness told Euromed Monitor that Habub and his family took refuge in the Holy Family School after an Israeli regime bombing targeted a house in which they were taking refuge and that they had previously fled their own home due to the heavy Israeli regime bombing of Gaza City. The day after the family's arrival at the school on December 8, the Zionist regime forces stormed the building and abducted all the men and some women, stripping the men and taking them to an unknown destination. After midnight on December 10th, the Zionist regime forces released a group of abductees, including multiple elderly people, then targeted them only minutes later with a tank shell and a quadcopter flying over their heads, causing the death of Habub along with the academic Abu Hafsa. Euromed Monitor also documented the execution of an elderly man named Nawaf Muhammad Musa Azain on December 10th during the evacuation of the Auni al-Harthani school in Beit Lahia project in northern Gaza. The Beit Hanun resident Azain had been displaced with his family several times before the Zionist regime forces stormed the school where they were taking refuge. He was shot in the head, Human Rights Organization reported. The Euromed Monitor team further documented the execution of Bashir Haji,
71 of Gaza City's Zaytun neighborhood. Haji was killed by the Zionist regime forces while attempting to cross Salahuddin the Strip's main road on November 10th. His murder occurred shortly after the Zionist regime army published a picture showing one of its troops talking to Haji in the picture. The troop is pretending to be protecting and assisting Palestinian civilians during their displacement. Hala Haji, the granddaughter of the elderly Haji, told the Euromed monitor team that her grandfather, who appeared in the Zionist regime army photo, was brutally executed while crossing the displacement road. He died after being shot multiple times in the head and back, she revealed.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
And every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
RIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very interesting hadith which has been transmitted from Imam Ali alayhi salam. This hadith is about Islam. As you know, Islam is the final religion which Allah revealed to the Holy Prophet Muhammad in the form of the Quran, and it was by the revelation of this religion that prophecy and prophethood, Nubuwwat, came to a termination on this earth. And subsequent to the descent of Islam and God sending down the Quran to the Prophet, Allah will not accept any other religion from a human being besides, you know, besides Islam. In the Holy Quran, we read the following: indeed, with Allah, the religion is Islam. Inna ad-din indallahi al-Islam. And in another place, we read, should anyone follow a religion other than Islam, it shall never be accepted from him, and he will be among the losers in the hereafter. In this connection, it's been narrated that Imam Ali alayhi salam said the following: verily, this Islam is the religion of Allah, which he has chosen for himself, which he has developed before his eyes, which he has preferred for the best of all of his creatures, and whose pillars he has founded upon his love. He has abased other religions by honoring it, and humiliated other creeds before its sublimity. And as you know, Islam, if somebody accepts Islam and embraces it, then the acts that he might have performed, you know, the evil deeds or the sins that he might have performed before he became Muslim, those will be forgiven. The Prophet said, he who performs good acts after having embraced Islam will not be punished for anything that he did in his pre-Islamic state, whilst he who continues to commit bad after having embraced Islam will be taken to account for everything from beginning till the end. So these are very clear and explicit texts in the form of these verses of the Holy Quran as well as these hadiths, which state that, you know, Islam is the only religion that is now acceptable for man. And if somebody continues to follow another creed after, you know, the advent of Islam, this will not be accepted by him. Now, of course, there is a big theological debate amongst our ulama and our scholars regarding a person who has no awareness that there is a religion called Islam, you know. Somebody is unaware of this, and he happens to follow, you know, some other religion, and he perishes. What will be his state in the hereafter? Will God forgive such a person? Will he not be forgiven? This is something which should be discussed in its own place. Right now we're speaking about the person who is aware of, you know, what Islam is, and he recognizes its truth, but he continues to follow his other creed. Such a person, you know, his religion and the good deeds he performs will not be accepted by God. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at Islam in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.